Hey everyone, it's Billy Morrison and Ozzy Osbourne here. Our new show, The Madhouse Chronicles, is dropping this April. Join us as we watch and react to the maddest internet clips. What do we discuss, Ozzy?
Drugs, rock and roll, aliens, all that kind of shit.
Drugs, rock and roll, aliens, and all that kinds of shit. Visit osbournemediahouse.com for early access. What do you say? Do you think it's the wildest show on the internet?
You're in the madhouse now.
Hey, I'm Zach, and one day I'm gonna make movies, but right now I'm young, dumb, and not nearly as good looking as my co-hosts. So with the help of...
I'm Matthew.
I'm Rodrigo.
I'm Steven.
I'm going to learn what makes a movie great by watching all the classics I have skipped over. So pop the corn and turn your cell phone to silent, because it's time for a new episode of Zach on Film. John Wayne, blah, blah, blah. Cowboys, blah, blah, blah. Bang, bang, bang. Attractive lady, yada, yada, yada. Rio Bravo this week on Zach on Film.
a bit of an opinion, a little bit of a bias on that intro.
Oh, I forgot to put Woody joke. Dang it. I usually try to put a Woody joke in there.
Oh, okay.
I can teach Dang. You no more, my son. Go forth.
So, Rio Bravo, 1959, Howard Hawks, John Wayne joint.
Mm-hmm.
It's not
we've
a joke.
We've talked about this last week on Zach on Film.
And yeah, briefly.
This is the only reason we're watching this is because this is John Wayne and Howard Hawks' response to High Noon, which they thought was a un-American movie, mm-hmm. and that they were going to tell the same tale.
Right.
The right way.
This is something that does happen in film and literature and actually in a lot of art.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Somebody goes in and they see a piece, whether that's a statue or a film or a TV show, and they say to themselves, I can do this better, or this wasn't done the right way.
Right. Mm-hmm.
And then they take it upon themselves to do it right.
Sometimes, though, in some of those cases, it's just like, oh, how can I make money off this Hobbit craze? And so I'm going to create my own little Hobbit War ripoff movie kind of thing. And then there are some people that are like, hey, Die Hard made some money. We can make Die Hard our way and do it better.
We could just do it with different characters.
Like Die Hard on a boat.
With the same ideas.
But I don't think that they go in and say, moralistically, we're going to make this movie because that other movie was un-American. So we're going to do it. I think that does happen. You think so?
Oh, absolutely.
I think that does happen. Absolutely.
Like what? Give me an example.
I can't think of any right now. But if I think of one, I'll
definitely please do that. And didn't mean to dump that on you right there.
Sure.
Because I mean,
I brought it up, so I should have probably thought about it.
but that's kind of this case here where, and I really was going to, because, you know, contrary to popular belief, growing up, I actually did like reading Playboy for the interviews and the articles. Mm-hmm. They had some great stuff in
there. They're
not
mutually exclusive. You can also like naked ladies.
I also like naked ladies. But I did enjoy it more often than not. I would find myself reading the articles in the Playboy, and I was going to look and see if they had a Kindle version. At one point, Playboy collected like all their top 20 questions. They had a feature called 20 Questions, where they sit down with someone who's famous and they basically ask them 20 questions and expand on this. Mm-hmm. I believe it was a 79 article in Playboy where they were interviewing John Wayne, maybe not 79, where he basically went and said, this was an un-American movie and this is why we did this. And I wanted to see if I could find the actual quote from the Playboy magazine. And I know at one point they did collect all their interviews and they have several volumes of those. And if you're into interviews and readings and that kind of stuff, I would suggest doing that because they are some really in-depth and great, not your dry Time Magazine, Newsweek type interviews, but really kind of well thought out questions and answers in that stuff. But that apparently is where this came from. And it is on record that John Wayne was saying, hey, I wanted to run the director out of Hollywood on a rail during the Who Act that we were talking about last week. So then we get to Rio Bravo.
Yeah.
Man, remember how I said The Searchers, how it made me hate Westerns all over again?
Yeah.
Rio Bravo just reinforced that idea.
This movie I hated worse than any movie we've made that we've watched, mainly because this has 100% rating on Rotten Tomatoes.
I know. That's crazy, right? Mm-hmm.
And I can't wrap my mind around it.
Well, here's the thing. So... a couple of weeks ago when we did High Noon, someone on Twitter said, thank God, major spoilers, and other people on the podcast had their dislike for the Searchers.
Right.
Because of its racist, misogynistic attitudes
in
that movie. And then this week, as we were preparing for this episode, I said, ugh, I got to watch Rio Bravo for Zach on Film, the things I do for our listeners.
Yeah, yeah.
And somebody said, hey, I love Rio Bravo. It was a great memory that I had of watching that show with my grandfather.
Which is what I said when we watched The Searchers.
Yeah. Sure. And I think that's I think that I like this movie because it has fond memories of X, I think is a valid reason for liking a movie.
Sure.
Right? Oh, I mean,
absolutely.
I think the reason why I like The Rockford Files so much, and to a lesser extent, Quincy Jones, M.D., and what was another 70-ish type detective show?
Quincy M.E.
Quincy M.E. Medical
Not Quincy
examiner.
Jones. Quincy Jones.
Quincy Jones,
guy.
M.D. Musical.
Right. Soul Train.
Soul Train. Because I have
Magnum,
fond memories.
Yeah.
No, not Magnum. That had been the 80s. I had very fond memories of summer nights when my parents would go out to do, you know, their date night, of being dumped off at my grandparents' house and them having the windows open, breeze flowing in. They turn off the living room lights and they turn on TV and we would watch the Rockford Files and I would lay there as a young child and just kind of watch
Darcy
that with them and have these very fond memories of that experience with my grandparents. And I think that for people that like Rio Bravo or The Searchers or those kind of movies, because their grandfather liked it or they watched it with their dad in the case of The Searchers, and you like it because of those fond memories, I think that's valid. I think that's a valid reason for liking a movie.
Sure.
However, if you just look at the content of the movie itself.
Right. I mean, and a lot of those movies are coming from when I was 8, and I'm sure the commenter on Twitter was probably young when they watched the film.
Mm-hmm.
So the movie, the liking of the movie has nothing to do with the movie. It's just the fact that they were with family members and that was a great bonding experience.
But here's the thing. This is the westernest Western that ever did
this
Western.
Movie is so far up its own butt. It is terrifying.
But and that's the thing. Howard Hawks is a good director. And John Wayne is charismatic. And things happen in this movie that I like. There is nothing about this movie that isn't just so Western. I mean, I've never seen this one before.
I don't know.
This is every...
First 10
this is
minutes.
Every Western I know my grandfather ever watched.
The first 10 or 15 minutes of the movie is nothing but a ridiculous pantomime.
Yeah, that was nuts. I couldn't wrap my mind around this.
Dean Martin.
Is there something wrong with my download? Why is no one saying anything? A man just was shot. No one yelled. No one said anything.
Someone
no
punched,
like, don't.
You know, Dean Martin punched John Wayne in the face with a club. And nothing was said. Not an oof, not a
It is. It is just. Such
it's just
a,
this weird pantomime.
Such an eerie thematic choice.
It's
sure.
I mean, it is.
Yeah.
Just like, and here's the thing, if it had been shot differently, it would work. Like if it had somehow been shot from the point of view of like a child peeking through the bar window.
Yes.
Or like if it had been played as a memory,
yes,
or something like that. Like there are ways that would have worked, but the fact that you know the camera is at the same level that that it will be for the rest of the movie.
Yeah.
Everything looks exactly the same. All the characters that we're going to interact with later and hear speak later are there, and then like it almost felt like
when we watched Sharks and the Jets. West Side Story. Where, you know, it's this weird dance at the beginning and no one talks before the music, before they actually start singing. It's just this weird...
It reminded me of the, again, Lost episode, the Broadway melodies section of Singing in the Rain. Because that's, like... That is how they tell the story, right? He yells out, gotta dance, but that's, like, the only lyrics in that section. Is like everything else is just pantomime, and that's what it felt like. As I was watching this, my thought was like, "Is this going to be a musical?" Because having seen Ricky Nelson in the cover art of it, I was like, "Oh, maybe this whole thing is actually going to be a musical." Which, again, knowing what I knew about this being a response to High Noon, I was like,
"No way, this is going to be a musical."
That is such a weird way to do it.
Something else about this that I've been thinking about is at work, we have to have the television on because if something comes on that has a local news or weather alert, we have to see it. But we have to find a channel that people can agree on. And so I and the grandmas often spend the afternoon watching two episodes of Gunsmoke and two episodes of Bonanza. Rio Bravo is the template for all of the TV westerns from when Steven and I were kids. Your Bonanzas, your Gunsmokes, your Big Valleys, your even to some degree your Kung Fu are all set in this town. And, you know, Matt Dillon is basically Jack T. John T, how you doing, John T? By the way, if one more person said John T, I was literally going to dig out my own fillings with a spoon and start spitting them at people.
It is a weird flirt, right?
Also, like,
what's your middle name, Rodrigo? What's your middle initial?
D.
D. So it'd be like, hey, Rodrigo.
Hey,
D.
Rodrigo D. You know, sometimes I do go by Rodrigo D. Lopez because there's 1,000.
Right, right. But I'm just saying, for someone like to call you formally in a very flirtatious way. Right. Hey, Rodrigo D.
It's also weird, and it's probably again because English is not my first language, and I might not detect the pronunciation difference. But there's a word that's just jaunty. Right?
Oh,
like,
sure.
Like somebody has a jaunty chapeau.
Yeah.
Something like that, which is like. So I just like, I swear the first 3 times that she said it, I thought she was just calling him jaunty.
Oh,
it's just like, it's just such a weird nickname to have for someone. It's like a cat.
It's like a cat's name. She's teasing him in a very flirtatious way.
Yeah, it was really weird.
It's very.
Their relationship felt.
Forced?
Like I was watching, grown-up junior high kids.
And I don't know what the actual age difference was between John Wayne and Angie Dickinson at this point in the movie. But he's much older. She's much younger. She's 20
In character, it's probably at least 15 or 20 years.
She's like 22.
He was born in 1907.
Yeah.
He was born in 1907. She was born in 1931. So it's a good quarter of a century.
Yeah. So, again, even making a parallel between High Noon, the sheriff is much older than the woman he is falling in love with.
Oh, sure.
But they have a very different relationship where she is this gambler, felon, woman in trouble, contrasted to the religious, moral, no fighting or I'm going to leave you. Kelly character that we saw in High Noon.
And the business owner, the hotel owner of a different race. It's like, oh, God, this movie sucked. I hate this movie so much.
I like his
this is the thing.
My God.
Other characters leave and he's still there talking to himself in Spanish.
Yeah. Oh my God. That was annoying.
I was really waiting for somebody with I guess for this, it would be like a sopapilla to slap it in his face and go, mwah, mwah,
that's what it was.
But with a trumpet.
Yeah. It's like, people speak a different language. It must be funny.
I know, right?
It was.
But you know what makes it so much worse?
I couldn't figure out if he's supposed to be there for comedy relief. I mean, he's obviously for comedy relief.
It's comedy a little bit.
But he actually serves some kind of purpose in the story.
I mean, it's okay. So if you look at High Noon and Rio Bravo and you start drawing parallels between the characters, you can start to see. Mm-hmm. Like some of these deliberate choices, right? So, for example, you have your main character who instead of running around asking for help is like actively patrolling the streets with his cool friend. And he's like, hey, cool
and
friend,
he's actually,
look out over
instead
there.
Of asking, instead of asking people to come help him like we see in High Noon, he's telling people, John Wayne is telling people, stay away, I don't want your help because you're going to get in trouble.
I don't need anyone. I'm super white and awesome.
I'm the sheriff,
and your help is not needed.
If you take the highly complex and progressive and interesting character of the Mexican shop owner, from High Noon,
Ramirez,
Mrs. Ramirez, or something like that,
Mrs. Ramirez,
And what does that get translated into is like...
Well, he's a hotel owner.
So here's this character. Here's this character who has a lot of power over a lot of people, right? But then when you bring it over to the other side, he's this character who is actively subservient to the main character.
Right.
He does whatever the main character tells him to do.
Right.
He is basically powerless to protect himself and his family.
And,
and usually does it... in a way that John Wayne is unhappy with.
Right.
He's like, you didn't wake me up. What were you doing?
And he's like, downright stupid about it, right?
Yeah.
He's like, are you going to go tell her that she's a fool?
Yeah.
He's like, like, who does that, right? So again, here's this character, like, this is clearly like these guys looking at this movie and saying, wow, that dark lady has a lot of power.
Yeah,
that's not right. Let's turn him into a ridiculous shop owner, like a ridiculous hotel owner,
and who's impacted by his wife and too. And his wife is very, you know, telling him what to do. He's like, oh yeah, yeah,
right. But she's also dumb and useless.
And that's the point. I think if we had watched this just as a movie, I think it would have been no more or less abhorrent than The Searchers. I mean, some of the similar stuff. In fact, I'd say probably less
a little milder
than
The Searchers.
Sure.
But if you look at it as...
I don't know.
I enjoyed High Noon.
Mm-hmm.
I really liked High Noon. High Noon is an excellent film.
Yeah, it is.
Looking at this and saying this is a response to High Noon is literally like somebody, you know, going and saying, you know what would make the entire Strawberry Fields album better? Some fart noises and re-recording every song on kazoo and banjo with fart noises and going, here's my version of the Beatles' excellent album. And I think,
well, but see, that's okay. That's the thing though. Howard Hawks comes into this saying High Noon is not a good album. You just said the Beatles' excellent album. Howard Hawks and John Wayne are coming in saying that High Noon movie is a terrible movie. We're going to do this right. So your fart noise and ukuleles would be like, oh, the Beatles didn't know what they were doing. You know what? You know what Lucy in the Sky needs? It needs a. That's how ridiculous this is. Now, which one is the most offensive? Gosh, I have to really think about that because I was really, 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 really put off by The Searchers a long time ago, decades ago.
Mm-hmm.
But I appreciate what Ford is doing from the aesthetics of the tale.
Yeah.
Right?
It's a pretty movie.
It's a very pretty movie, and it's shot in that widescreen. It's very pretty.
God, that Native American has such a blue eye.
Then when we get to this one, it is... You know, they shot it on location over a summer. But
are there any close-ups in this movie?
No, there's like four close-ups in the movie.
And it's literally just all
Drew. Hawks did that specifically. We see the gun at the beginning with the shooting the guy. We see the close-up of the beer with the blood dripping into it. There's another. There are two more, and I think it's during the singing portions. You see Stumpy. With his close up, and then you see Ricky Nelson with his close up, and that's really all there is in the piece. Everything else is shot all at the same level, all at the same.
Right, yeah.
I mean, there's nothing. I mean, even the lighting, is not motivated. The lighting in this piece
there's a whole lot of blue kick, a
lot of blue kicker in this. Which I do like some blue kicker light.
Sure,
but I mean, it's like I was watching.
It's like you're in a hotel room. Where is this blue light coming from?
Because we've really forgotten to do this. Take a moment to explain what that is.
Oh, okay. Kicker light?
Sure.
Is that what you're talking about?
Yeah.
Okay, so when we're doing traditional lighting, your principal source of illumination is called the key light. That is what is, and ideally all lighting should be motivated. So, for example, you're sitting down right now listening to this episode, and you've got you're laying in bed, and you've got, you've got your side light
reading
on,
light.
Your reading light on. Mm-hmm. That is illuminating the room. That would be your key light. Now, some of that light... maybe bouncing across the room, off the wall, and coming back at you. And it's not going to be as intense as your key light, but it's helping some of those shadows not be as dark. That's called a fill light.
Mm-hmm.
And so the purpose of fill light is to lessen the shadows. And depending on what type of movie you're doing, if you're doing something that's very film noir, which we've talked about many times, your fill light is not as intense. You're going to have you're going to have a lot of contrast between one side of the person's face and the other.
Yeah, think like Godfather and the Maltese Falcon.
Yeah. And on the flip side of that, if you think of a three-camera comedy, that is something that has a very low contrast range between key light and fill light, so everything looks bright and happy.
Mm-hmm.
You don't have very many shadows. So the kicker light or the rim light is a light that's supposed to accent the outline of something and help separate it from the bed from the background. Mm-hmm. So again, you're in the bedroom and you're standing up, and if we were shooting that with just the bedside lamp, it would probably look very flat because you would kind of be blending into the background, which is also dark. The back of your head is dark. The background is dark. You'd probably be very flat and not have a lot of separation. But if you have a bedroom window and it happens to be a full moon, the moonlight is going to come in and it's going to look very blue and it's going to create this rim of light around your shoulder and head. and help create that separation between you and the background.
Right.
So that's what a rim light is, or a kicker light, you know, a couple of different terms you can use for that. And it's to provide separation. And ideally, it should be motivated.
Sure.
But it's like almost every single scene has a very orange key light. And no matter where they're sitting, they've got a blue rim light, blue kicker.
Right.
And it's really, really apparent. And maybe it's because this was shot in Technicolor.
In the hotel.
In the hotel, yes. But, I mean, people's hair looks blue. I mean, like blue. And it's not just because of the kicker light. I mean, it's just the light hitting their jet black hair. And suddenly it's like, why do you got blue hair?
No, well, it looks like because, old comics.
That's because that's because Ricky Nelson is actually a Kryptonian.
Yes.
So he's got, that's why he looks the way he does.
Yeah, you're right. You're exactly right, Zach. If you see old comics where black haired people are actually blue,
have
hair,
blue hair,
it looks exactly the same way. Man,
well, that's so that was like a fundamental problem with this movie. It's
so we've
like,
already talked about two technical things.
Let's do High Noon the right way. And
yes.
And their idea of the right way was super Western movie.
Yes.
Based on story and none of the, they didn't like remake.
No, it's not like there's character development.
No, there's
no
character development, but there's no production value really at all in this freaking film. I mean, there's some because they're like on horses and crap, but like the technical aspects of this film are not there because that wasn't the point.
Well, you got some dolly shots, but
that's the thing is, there is clearly money in this film, right?
Yeah.
There has been money put into this film, but, and again, you get into things like this, like, can you really say this? But there is very little artistry that's been put into this film.
Right.
They focused on the script of this floppy hat Superman. and then just said, okay, director of photography, gaffer, and
by the numbers.
And everybody else by the numbers. Absolutely. 100% by the numbers.
Yeah. And it's, I mean,
and I think the,
So the story is, for those of you that don't know the story, because we're now 30 minutes into this episode, we probably have to tell you what the story's about.
I mean, it's High Noon, but it's an hour and a half longer. An hour longer.
Well, so in the case of High Noon, the bad guy's getting out of jail and he's coming for the sheriff.
Right.
In Rio Bravo, there's been an altercation at the bar. The guy has been thrown into jail, but he also happens to be the brother of the land baron, who is somewhat mustache twisty.
Right. Yes.
Nefarious.
Pretty crooked.
And has put a hit out on anybody who's helping the sheriff until they can get the brother out of jail before the marshals come in 6 days.
Yeah.
And so basically it is a standoff with the town against whoever the bad guy is sending after them. And he's only like in two scenes in the whole movie
where he's doing his
whip twisting instead of mustache twisting.
The basic points that they're following is that Rio Bravo has, and that is getting from High Noon is there's a sheriff who's a central figure.
Yeah.
There are bad guys coming to get him.
Mm-hmm.
He has to dispatch them before, and the marshal gets here, or like this other authority figure comes in to take over. Right. So in a Rio Bravo, he's not going to hand over the job, but he is going to hand over the prisoner.
Right, the prisoner.
In High Noon, he's just handing over the job because there is no prisoner.
Right.
Right.
A lady almost leaves but doesn't.
Right.
Yes.
You know, and I'm trying to think. So if I were to improve this movie, first of all, it's 2.5 hours long. There are two musical numbers in this Western. There's one where Jane.
Are you telling me that in order to improve it, you would have added four more and made it a musical?
I would have taken out the two musical numbers, which are back to back.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
Dean and then Nelson, each singing their own song with Stumpy singing along.
Right.
Those two would cut out, and that would have taken out. That would have literally taken out 10 minutes out of the movie, and then take out that ridiculous pantomime at the beginning, and that would have taken out another 15 minutes. And there's 30 minutes of your movie.
And then you take out the time where Dude, was hogtied.
Yes,
that served no purpose.
Right.
He gets taken again. I don't understand why there had to be a second one.
There's a whole sequence there where it's like Dude loses
his gumption,
right?
Of,
sure,
you know,
right.
Like his joie de vivre or whatever.
Mm-hmm. I like gumption; it's more fitting for the
gumption. You flip the flop the bowling foot.
Looks to me like he lost his joie de vivre. it's weird because this movie is so plot driven, mm-hmm. but all of a sudden they have this episodic segment, right?
Gosh. Yes.
So in The Searchers, this is the sort of thing that would have perfectly fit in The Searchers, yes. because mm-hmm. The Searchers is, you know, like starts and ends more or less in the same place,
right?
And then 17,000 vignettes in the middle. Right. So in that sort of movie, dude gets taken in and loses his, like, it starts drinking again, and then eventually he stops drinking and he's back with the group,
mm-hmm.
would have fit right in. But in this, it does feel very, again, it's all of a sudden it's like you're watching a different movie.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. And the yeah. weird thing is, if you're looking for character development, and people were like, well, you know, dude's character has this huge change because he's coming off of alcoholism and going through the DTs and everything. And it's like, yeah, but if you watch, there's a point where he's sworn off drinking, and yet the first time he goes into a bar, he actually is drinking some beer, and then like literally 5 minutes later, he sees another beer there, and he's kind of like, oh, do I go back to the evil drink? And he's like, no, I can't go back to the drink. But it's like literally just a, you know, just mm-hmm. 5 minutes before you were drinking something in the same location. And yes, his alcoholism, that part of the story is maybe somewhat interesting, but it's very
one of the things
trope.
That
I, it
one
just
of the
follows
that,
the pattern.
One of the things that I really did like about this movie is the fact that the incredible Deadshot isn't the main character.
Yeah, yeah.
Like, he's not the sheriff.
Right.
He's actually this other person.
Right.
Like, it's weirdly, this is one of those rare movies where you have a Luke Skywalker and a Han Solo.
Mm-hmm.
Usually in
mm-hmm.
most movies, they're just Captain Lone Star. Right?
Yeah. Yeah.
Matthew, find something that's good about this movie. Besides
Angie Dickinson in her underwear.
Yeah. And even that is forced because she's like, you've got the bad Mexican woman coming out going, oh, you got to go in. She's all sexy or whatever times. And she goes in, and that's another scene that could have just been cut out, because she's like, well, I'm going to go downstairs and dance in my underwear because I'm working here now. And unless you don't want me to, John T.
Yeah.
And I know you don't want me to. And he's like, well, I didn't say either way. And it's just this long, drawn
out
thing for no other reason to put her in some, you know, a full body suit and stockings.
That was a 10-minute scene.
Yeah, could have been taken out.
Well, it was a 10-minute sitting there and singing
the movie.
Scene.
Their response to what they classified was an un-American movie was to make this huge dude shoot 'em up movie and then end it with 10 minutes of a girl in underwear.
Well, and that's...
Well, and I guess
it's nuts.
But here's
that's the
thing. That's the beautiful
that
thing.
That is one of the things going into this movie. That they were going to make the shootiest of shooting westerns.
Oh,
and I think that's actually one of the reviews somewhere, if you read for it, is like, this is the most shootiest of westerns ever made. And, well, of course, that was, you know, 1950. Yeah.
Well, sure,
point,
even at that point, even at that point, it's like, there's none.
So let me ask you this. What, when you think of a western, what do you think of? Just put everything out of your mind. What do you think of a Western? What does it stand for and what does it represent?
Oh, gosh. Just like dudes broing out.
Okay, what is this movie about?
Kind of dudes broing. No,
it's not really. It is dudes broing out.
It really is.
Westerns are this masculine...
Yeah.
Man-hero, man-hunk kind of thing with the woman at the feet worshiping the hero mm-hmm, that came and rescued mm-hmm, them. Mm-hmm. High Noon isn't that way because his wife is totally, no, you're not doing this.
Well, that's
no one wants to be
the sheriff's
mm-hmm. bro. They don't want to be his friend.
Yeah, nobody wants to be his
bro. The problem with
that's a great way to put it. High Noon, no one's your bro.
The problem with them trying to fix High Noon with this movie is that they assumed High Noon was trying to be a Western. And in my mind, High Noon is not trying to be a Western. They just have a story they want to tell, and they just set it in that setting.
In that Western setting, yeah.
John Wayne makes Westerns.
Yeah. And what is he? Wayne is this ideal. He is an ideal representation of what a quote-unquote man should be.
Yes.
Right? And so
it
has to be the broiest of bro dude movies. That's why the guy's name is Dude, right?
The guy's name is Dude.
And then the
other guy's name is Jaunty.
And then they said, "How you like them apples?" at the end.
But yes.
This movie is kind of it reminds me of The Searchers in that in The Searchers, you have all those shots of the big, beautiful rocks. And in this, John Wayne is like, we ain't got no rocks, so I'm just going to sit here like this. I'll be the rock pilgrim.
What's fascinating
to me is how many people whose opinions I respect on movies, like Roger Ebert, want to tell me that this is a perfect, a wonderful, amazing, perfect movie. And I just don't get it. I hate this movie.
I finished this movie, and so I always go read Ebert's reviews, and I said, this will be a 2-star movie. And it had a great movie on top. I go, oh, Ebert.
So let me ask you this.
Yes.
And Ebert, you know, he sees a lot of movies, and he's changed his mind over the years.
Sure. I don't think this is like his original review of it.
Here's the thing. We've been focusing a lot on themes, representations of characters, these kinds of things.
Mm-hmm.
If I had just thrown Rio Bravo, which is not on the list, we're only doing this because it is the reaction to. If I had thrown Rio Bravo in as one of the very first movies, do you think you would have as liked it as much as you would have a year and a half later when we've gone through all of these movies? We talked about themes. We talked about representations of characters. We've talked about the technology. Now you're finally to this point where you're critically analyzing this movie and saying,
oh, so you're talking
from the critical analysis standpoint, this movie is not.
So you're
good.
Talking the beginning of the Zach on film idea, not just this, like the string of Westerns we've been doing.
Right.
I don't know. I mean, it'd be hard to say.
It's still a 3-hour, two-and-a-half movie.
It's still what I consider to be one of the slowest movies I've ever seen.
I will say this, Stephen, and I'm as I am wont to do, I will put this in a comic book context. In the 1990s, I was a fan of a book called Sandman, which was the story of a Lord of the Dream who went around and had adventures. And Marvel Comics did a book that they actually said was Sandman done right. And it was the story of this creature from a dream dimension who came and was a superhero and punched guys in the face. Reading Sleepwalker.
There's that example I was looking for.
Oh, yeah, yeah, there you go. Now they have to do is make it a movie.
You read your Sleepwalker.
Yeah.
And you say, this is an okay comic. I mean, this is, you know, kind of cliche and kind of interesting. And there are points of it that I don't like. But when you realize that the creators wanted it to be an actual response to something that I consider to be ever so much better, it's kind of like, you know, Michael Bay made a Transformers movie and he said, we fixed all the problems with Transformers. And everybody said, what's wrong? And they said, mass shifting is no longer an issue. All the robots are the size that they should be. And then he proceeded to make a 2-hour movie that has no plot, no characters, no sense. But he fixed the problem that he saw was there. That's kind of Rio Bravo to me. He fixed the problem.
So if you look at if you separate yourself from everything that we've done and talked about on Zach on Film, the fact that this is a movie that is a 100% straight up masculine driven shoot 'em up, bang bang
guys
dude bro
bad guys
dude bro movie. This is a 100% Western. This is probably why it deserves to have 100% rating.
It's like based on just on its like the Everclear of Western.
Just based on its standalone. What is it trying to achieve? It's trying to be the westerniest of westerns westerned. Yes, it achieved that goal.
I will rebuttal that and compound off of Matthew Save It Michael Bay because I wanted to get to Michael Bay in this, ironically enough.
Oh, because of the post somebody posted this week about Michael Bay?
I have no idea.
There's a video on Vimeo
about
Bayism.
Not even. Well, I haven't watched it yet.
Okay.
It might be in that way
I've
at all.
I've seen it already.
Okay, so this movie deserves 100% rating because it is the epic of like the genre. It like profound. Okay. Then I believe all of Michael Bay's Transformers movies should be over 90% because he's making blockbuster movies that are going to just sit people and just go, and that's what he's doing.
Well, why is it a blockbuster movie? Why is it making millions?
That's what
why
I'm
is
saying.
Each one making millions of dollars? So, because people go in and go, I just want to see things blowing up.
Okay. So if that's how we're going to start rating our movies,
Not how I'm rating my movies.
But that's how you're saying this movie earned its 100%.
Yeah.
Michael Bay's movies should be over 90% because he is doing it. He is making spectacle movies.
Yeah.
That's what he does.
Yeah.
That's what he wants to do. And he does it unbelievably well.
Well,
but his movies have no plot.
Yeah.
I mean, that might be that might be what ends up happening in the future. You know, like looking back at these ratings, like on Rotten Tomatoes, they're not just the ratings of when the movie came out immediately.
No, they're
respective ratings from multiple critics over a certain amount of time.
Has it got a fresh rating on it or not? Did you look and see if that was 100% fresh? Because the way Rotten Tomatoes works.
Yeah, 100% fresh.
Because does it have the fresh seal?
No, it's all percentage based. If you over 60%, you're fresh.
There is something that gets a seal if critics are over a certain percentage.
I believe
that's 60%. So this 100%
critics are 100%.
When you Google an image or Google a movie and it brings up, that's always the critics one. It's not
because it's not the combined.
No, that's why you don't look at IMDb because it's all people.
It's 100% on the Tomatometer. The audience ratings are 91%.
Ah, see.
But even so, 91%.
Yeah, again,
this is 2.5 hours of my life that I will never get back.
Here's what I think is really great about this movie.
Go for it.
They said High Noon is un-American. We're going to make the most American movie ever. And it kind of is because, again, it's like they strip out all of like the fun parts of High Noon. And it's just like this very by the number, straightforward bang, bang, bang. It has a musical number in it because somebody clearly, like contractually, said you can't have Ricky Nelson in a movie.
Right.
He doesn't sing. You can't do that. So, and they're like, okay, we're gonna have him do a Western thing, and then they're like, oh no. He's also has to do a rock and roll song, which he does.
Mm-hmm.
He does right after they do the Western thing, they do a rock and roll song.
Yeah.
Either because like it didn't meet his time quota, like he has to sing at least for 3 minutes in this movie.
He's gonna have a solo, is what it is.
Or because he has to have his own song.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And he's Ricky Nelson, so he's gotta do a rock and roll song.
Yeah.
It's just like it's just incredible how like it's like they took High Noon, which is a pretty decent steak.
I'm not saying that's a perfect movie.
This isn't American enough, and they turned it into a hot dog.
Yeah. And hot dogs have a pretty high rating.
People love hot dogs.
On the hot dog rating meter, it's 100%.
I had a hot dog earlier today. It was made of,
of American parts.
It was Vienna beef.
Real American.
Oh, Vienna beef.
Yes,
okay.
That's right. So it was a high quality hot dog, which I would say Rio Bravo is. Rio Bravo is a very high quality
hot dog. If you're looking at the westerniest of westerns, this one fits the bill. Mm-hmm. And thus, I can understand why people give it 100% rating. But to say that it's better than High Noon is like saying that Transformers is better than,
well, I mean,
The Rock
and
to Michael Bay.
Sure.
To a certain degree, it's like saying, is a hot dog better than quiche?
Yeah.
Like, I think a lot of
depends on your taste, right?
I think a lot of Americans are going to say, I would much rather have a hot dog than have a quiche.
Yeah.
It's like, but it's like, when they made the quiche, they weren't trying to make a hot dog.
Right.
It's like people are eating this quiche and saying, this hot dog tastes funny.
Yeah. We got some people that...
Let's give some shout out to some... Our associate producers for this week. Amber Danette, Robert Caslake, Paul Fassett, Lingskong Severing, Robert Laville, Stephen Propst, Christopher Dolly, Julie Hess, Richard McMaster... McMaster is an awesome last name. Christopher Mathias, Josh Payne, James Humphreys, Laith Al-Nahar, William Gibson, and Daniel Evanson. Thank you for donating to Major Spoilers and keeping what we do going each and every week. We appreciate you all so very much and hope to see you around the bend. I don't know what that meant.
How do you like them apples? also, like... Okay, so there's the guy. He's got his cool bro. He's got his
cool dude.
His cool dude bro. He's got a kid, and he's got like a comedy sidekick too. Yes. He's like, "All right, get back in the cage."
Yes.
Hang on, I got you some dynamites. That's a good idea. Let's blow up the fuck. Wait, I almost F-bombed. My bad.
I think you did.
This movie is so terrible that it made me almost.
I was just hitting my space bar on my computer, how much longer can this possibly be?
Over. Here's the thing. I had a 3D print going before I sat down to watch the movie, and I knew that it was going to take like over an hour to do.
Mm-hmm.
About halfway through, about the scene where it's the underwear scene, I was like, well, I'm going to go check on this print. Oh, the print is done? Okay, let me start another one.
Yeah.
And then sat back down, didn't pause the movie, had the movie continue, sat back down, still in the underwear scene,
mm-hmm.
and the print was still done before the movie was over.
I was really surprised at how long this movie was. It really obviously didn't need to be that long.
No, I mean, you could really trim this down to a solid, you could trim this down to a solid hour and a half, really.
Yeah,
easily trim it down to an hour.
You could take an hour out of this film and not lose a single coherent point.
No. I mean, instead of 6 days,
you could
knock it down to 2 days.
You could chop every scene in half.
Well, it could still be 6 days.
Well, that's the thing. They made it realistic because the movie actually feels like it lasts for 6 days. That may have been what they were going for.
And by no way is Rio Bravo the longest movie we have watched on this podcast.
No, we've watched 3 hours.
We've watched Lawrence Arabia, which I swear 45 minutes of was just look at the desert dunes. And Lawrence of Arabia felt faster than Rio Bravo.
Yeah.
2001 A Space Odyssey.
Now, was it just me?
No one talks in that entire movie.
Or did Reverend Clayton,
faster.
Did Reverend Clayton showing up at the front of this movie just seem like, here's one of my friends and he's got a speaking role now? The thing with Ward Bond, and he's like, yeah, mm-hmm. and here's this young kid who's going to be in the rest of the movie with you.
Oh, yeah.
You remember in The Searchers, Reverend Captain Clayton?
Yeah.
He's in this movie for all of 5 minutes with his little wagon train.
Well, he needs
and
to
he's
get...
the one who brings in the Chekhov's gun.
Again, he needs to, okay, he is there so that he can get shot, so that Colorado can join them, but then he's not the one that gets the final justice. It's actually Dude that gets the guy that shot his boss, but then he still joins the party. Right?
Right.
You know what this movie needed?
Because you gotta have
it
a bar.
It needed them actually holed up in the jail while the bad guys were outside shooting.
Yes.
That's what the movie needed. That's what the final action should have been.
I do like that they're like, hey, I just got a great idea for a cool final action scene for this movie. Let's go do it. And then the bad guys are like, hey, wait a minute. Let's just do something else instead. Yeah. So they're like, they trap him, and then it's weird because
it's dark in here. Put a rope across the stairs.
That's the amazing.
Oh my gosh.
Oh yeah. Also, he flops down. Boom.
He's out.
He's out. Cool.
He's out. What a man.
Again, it's funny that it's like we plot wise we're going to fix this movie, but they just remove all the tension. For example, one of the things that they do is they reverse the final action scene.
Mm-hmm.
What it should have been is all of the good guys hold up in a house
mm-hmm.
shooting out while the bad guys are outside shooting in at them, right? Then the bad guys find some dynamite and oh no, how are the good guys going to get out of this one? Instead, the bad guys have like the upper hand the whole time because they have them hold up in a house.
Yeah.
You know, and then they find dynamite and they blow them out.
Yeah. It's dumb.
Well, and that may be the point, though. I mean, if you look at this from a John Wayne perspective, that other movie was un-American because the hero wasn't always in control and unstoppable.
Right. And he had emotions
and
stuff.
That may be part of the reason why people like Rio Bravo is it's what in the wrestling parlance we'd call a squash match. You know that Denny Terrio is not going to come out and beat Hulk Hogan. Hulk Hogan is going to control that match. He's going to win it with his, you know, lame finishing move. And you're going to enjoy it and you're going to cheer because he's the square-jawed hero. And I don't like that. I certainly think that from the perspective of storytelling and having something that I really want to look at, I'd rather see the Gary Cooper all by himself with no friends, forsaken by everyone, still having to fight against these people because it's his responsibility, even though it's not his job anymore. Mm-hmm. You know, and asking for help and not getting it, that to me feels better than Rio Bravo, where he doesn't want help, but he gets it anyway because everybody loves him. He's
right,
the hero.
Right. Yeah. I mean, that is
this is designated hero at its finest.
Yeah, it's like the two. I mean, and again, kind of bringing it back to comics, it's the. It's like Superman versus Spider-Man,
right.
to a large degree. It's, you know, John Wayne is flying around being awesome and everybody sure loves him.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And it's like, and the other one is like your angsty, like, is Spider-Man, is the X-Men, is like, that guy's a menace. Like, let's not help him at all.
Right.
But yet he still saves the day. He still helps everybody.
Yeah.
And it is, you know, to a large degree, Superman is still very maligned today because of that style of writing. You know, Superman was invented in the 30s.
Yeah.
you can't hold that against them.
No.
Yeah. Right.
It's there's a reason why to this day we still have angsty protagonists that nobody helps because that's a much stronger thing than a guy that everybody loves, like, gets help from his cool friends and then easily beats the bad guys.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah, yeah. Mm-hmm. Hey, before we get out of here this week, I want to make sure that people know that we have a lot more shows in the Major Spoilers Podcast Network besides just Zach on Film.
Yeah.
Check this out. We've got a big, long list of shows that you can find. You can find The Want List, which is a video show that Zach, I, and Ashley do every week, where we talk about products that are coming down the line that you simply want to add to your want list. On Tuesdays, we have Munchkin Land. It's a gaming podcast where we sit around and play card games. It's actually very entertaining. Mm-hmm. Then we also have Magic Minute. If you want to learn how to play Magic the Gathering in a minute, James does a great show where he goes through and runs through the mechanics of different parts of Magic the Gathering. And it's worth your time. We also have Geek History Lesson. If you're trying to find out the history of something geeky, be it the Game of Thrones characters, or be it Transformers, or be it Wonder Woman, they cover it on Geek History Lesson. That's with Jason and Ashley. Then, of course, we have the Major Spoilers Podcast. That is a show about comics, movies, pop culture, news, reviews, interviews, all of that wrapped up in one fun show. If you want an in-depth review over a single comic each week, Matthew and I sit down and do doodling review. If you like a list, and who doesn't love a list, Rodrigo?
Everybody loves a list.
Everybody loves a list. And so we have top five for you every week, where we count down the top five somethings, fill in the blank, on that show. Of course, there's Zach on Film that you're listening to right now.
Yep.
On Saturdays, we have Critical Hit. It's a Dungeons & Dragons gaming podcast with a lot of in-depth character development and cool story plots.
Yeah, if you like stories, you should listen to that.
Yeah, yeah, definitely. Then Zach also does the Want List Audio Edition, where he runs down some of the cool things that have popped up during the week that you might be interested in. And then finally, we wrap up on Sundays with Wayne's Comics Podcast. It's a nice interview show where Wayne sits down and talks with a bunch of different comic creators throughout the industry. Mm-hmm. It's a great way to wrap up your Sunday, something to listen to when you're reading the newspaper. So those are some of the shows on the Major Spoilers Podcast Network. And if you want to check out our video channel, I encourage you to go over and subscribe to YouTube, to our Major Spoilers video channel. Lots of good stuff over there. All right. So we have banged up on Rio Bravo pretty hard. Mm-hmm. Have you learned something, Zach?
Yeah. Don't be John Wayne. No, be John Wayne. Make a lot of money. No, I just don't know. I wonder if I didn't know that they made this out of spite of High Noon. If my ideas this movie would be changed.
Eternal question.
I don't know if they would have, because it was just made so poorly. Like, it was just so boring.
Okay. I'm sure there's going to be a lot of people over at the Major Spoilers Podcast posting page.
Yeah, I'm sure they will have different opinions, and I would love to hear them, and we can talk about it. So go over there and give all your thoughts about Rio Bravo on that page. While you're there, click on the Amazon.com link.
Yep.
You can go do all your normal Amazon shopping. I was there this week, bought my stuff. It didn't cost me any extra to do that, but a little bit came out to the site, and it helps us keep going and going and going to make more stuff for you, like all those great shows that were just listed. Next week, we are leaving the Western genre. Hooray!
It's going to be until September before we come back to the Western. And even the Western that we hit in September, which is Shane, is not your typical Western.
Yeah, come back, Shane. But we will be watching and talking about Psycho next week on Zach on Film.
What's the best part of a Dunkin' Run? The coffee? Is it the coffee or the $1 donut or $2 stuffed bagel minis or $3 sausage, egg, and cheese that you can add to it? The answer, of course, is yes. Time for a Dunkin' Run. $3 offer available on sausage, egg, and cheese sandwich only. Excludes specialty donuts and fancies. Offer valid on medium or larger coffee. Price and participation may vary. Limited time offer terms apply.